This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by the Segus V Squared. It's packed with industry-leading tech, can have up to 464 gigabytes of storage thanks to dual SD cards, sports a 21-megapixel camera with 4K video, has Harman Kardon speakers, and it's waterproof. To be among the first to get the V Squared, go to Indiegogo.com and type V Squared into the search bar. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 241 for Friday, June 19th. I had to look around. I was like, I don't have a calendar.
I'm not sure about that.
Numbers or this stuff is hard. We do one of these a week, and I have to add like one to it every week. It's not easy doing what we do. Look at this face or listen to this voice. God, how good do we sound now?
Much better.
I think so.
Much, much better.
Anyway, hi, welcome. If it's your first time joining us, hi, I'm Phil. I run Android Central with these guys. For the video people, I'm pointing somewhere. I'm still so screwed up and where everything is in my office. I could just move the screen over here. Now I'm looking in the right place. Hi, how's it going? I'm Phil. That's Russell.
Hello.
That's Jerry.
I'm confused, but I'm here.
And Andrew just made it.
If by just made it, you mean 5 minutes late. But I thought I was going to jump into a live podcast, so that was a treat that you waited for me. I'm
glad we did, since apparently I wasn't ready anyway. Oh, man. I was periscoping beforehand and showing people the mixer and stuff, and it's still kind of a minor miracle that any of this is working. So, hi. Welcome to the show. But, oh my God, yeah, it sounds so much better. Really, I mean, and again, the reason I wanted to do it was for the cars. I figured if we're going to be writing as much about Android Auto as we are, we should try to sound better. So, and it did, except, and this was kind of interesting, one of the Android Auto apps, and we'll put a story up on Sunday, I think it's going to be my app for this week for that. I guess they transcode all the shows. And it sounds like crap, so I won't name the app yet. You'll have to come back Sunday to find out.
I think I can guess.
Yeah.
But I won't.
So, ooh, camera's locked on Andrew. Should we change it?
Gasp.
No.
All Andrew all the time.
That just lets me scratch whatever I want to scratch in the middle of the show. And I'm okay with that. So, what should we talk about this week? What... Wow. I have so many phones turned on right now. It's a little ridiculous.
I just glanced down at my desk, too. I was like, gosh, I hope that most of these are on silent.
I need to turn off all the notifications on this Mac, too, before something goes crazy.
Andrew has a phone that doubles as a deadly weapon.
Does he?
This one?
You want to talk about that first? Let's start with that. New toys.
Yeah.
Well, I'm disappointed that you got that color, by the way. You've been saying that you wish you hadn't gotten one of the other colors, but I'm disappointed.
I specifically got the, I guess they call it gray, but it's black. But this GS6 Active, for those who don't have video, I got the one that does not have the camo on the back, and I'm super stoked about that.
Because
they don't make like a hunter green one like they did with the GS5 Active, but the blue one has, you know, like a marine camo, and there's a white one with like a digital camo on the back.
Digital snow camo.
Yeah.
I had the green camo last year for the GS5.
Yes, I remember. I think our review was of the green one, and it was very much like should be at like an end cap at Cabela's or something. But yeah, so the GS6 Active, which it just kind of... It's funny how they do these actives where they release the GS6 with all this fanfare, of course, and then the GS6 Active is like, we hear about it a week before, and then AT&T just like puts it up for sale because it's an exclusive to them right now. And we make a rugged version.
They haven't put the actives out.
It's a gigantic battery.
But they haven't put the actives out anywhere else, have they? I think it's always...
Ever.
No. Sprint had one, I think. For the
they
four?
Named it something different. It was slightly different.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sprint had something.
But it's traditionally been AT&T.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting. This one is quite a bit, I would say, less of a compromise than the GS5 Active. I mean, this is the exact same internally as the GS6. same camera, same processor, all that stuff. It's got buttons in basically the same places, but it's ruggedized. You know, it's kind of got this rubberized stuff around the side. There's bigger bezels, and you notice it's kind of notched around the corners, so it can kind of take a little bit of an extra beating. I guess you can see, let's see if I can line them up. It's about that much taller than the GS6. So it's a little bit bigger in every dimension. It's a full 2 millimeters thicker. So it's like almost 9 millimeters instead of less than 7 on the original GS6. But you can't remove the battery just like the regular GS6, but the battery is almost 40% bigger than on the GS6. So people are kind of taking that as, I don't know, would you go as far as to say, is this like a slap in the face to people who bought the regular GS6 on AT&T?
No. If you didn't know this was coming.
Well, a lot of people don't. They
don't,
just think
don't what?
That
don't,
the GS6
don't
is like the thing to get.
Well, yeah.
And they're so spaced out is the big thing. You know, they're over 2 months apart, which, of course, no, not every GS6 that was sold or that will be sold was sold 2 months ago. But now that this is out there, I mean, so the battery is 3,500 milliamp hour. It's almost 1,000 milliamp hour more than the original GS6. But the thing is still super easy to, you could still fit your hand around it, easy to use. It's not, you know, if you get the black one without all the camo, it doesn't look that bad. You do lose a fingerprint scanner pretty much. And that's it.
I wouldn't call that a loss.
Well, right. The fingerprint scanner on the Galaxy S6 is kind of nice.
Not
but
yet.
It is interesting that they kept the wireless charging and...
Right. Because it's kind of like this woven nylon back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which the nice thing is that it actually stays put on wireless chargers too, because it's got grip to it. Whereas the original GS6 kind of slides off of things because it kind of hockey pucks around. But it's just kind of crazy. It's barely heavier than the GS6 because, you know, you have rubber, plastic, and like this nylon stuff, which is a lot lighter than the metal and glass that covered 90% of the regular GS6. So, you know, it doesn't feel like it's dramatically thicker or anything, and you get a battery that lasts the whole day, no matter what.
To me, that's the bigger deal.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know.
So, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the physical buttons on the front. You get 3 physical buttons, and the middle one's not a finger scanner. And you also get this extra button on the side that's launches some active zone or something like that. It gives you like a weather barometer, a compass, flashlight, stopwatch thing that you can quickly use. But the nice thing is you can reassign that button to be whatever you want. So you can use it as a camera shutter key. You can use it to launch a music player. So you can assign one thing to a single press and another thing to a long press. So you get this extra button you can use, and you know, you don't have to put a case on it. If you're somebody that's already going to put a case on a GS6, I would seriously consider, I mean, that is if you're on AT&T, getting the active instead of the regular one, which is kind of crazy.
They had that that little widget thing on the one last year too, I think.
Right.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're a ROM maker, please make something where that button takes you to Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone.
Yeah, that's the problem. You could use it to launch YouTube, but not a specific YouTube video.
But you could use it to launch a standalone music app and have that be the only MP3 on your MP3 player.
You could. So, I don't know. It's really cool. I mean, it's not as rugged as some of the like Kyocera phones and that you get on Sprint or whatever.
Cat phones
Right. But, you know, there's a little bit of a lip over the screen. So if you put it face down, it doesn't touch the screen on the table. It's got, you know, rubber that makes it, basically it's just so it's easier to hold on to. You know, the GS6 is a bit of a, you know, it's slippery on the side. So it basically, it's not that it'll survive a drop as much as you probably won't drop it as easily in the first place. And AT&T selling it for the same price, $199 for on contract for a 32 gig. It's a little expensive off contract. It's like $698 or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the GS6 is.
Right. The only other downside is there's no 64 or 128 gig version. So they only make one SKU. Well, they make three SKUs for the three colors, and that's it. They have 32 gig storage and no expandability like the GS6. I wish it was coming to more carriers. You know, nobody's going to switch, or probably should switch, to AT&T to get it. But if you're on AT&T and going to consider a GS6, I think it's worth at least going and trying it out. Don't just buy one blind off, you know, off their website or something.
Jerry, would you take this fishing?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't ever buy it, but if I had one, I would take it, you know, anywhere. If it's like the last year's model, the S5 Active, it's pretty damn tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at the review to kind of compare the pictures and stuff, and it's pretty much the same design.
Last year they talked about how it would take up to like 2 G's of shock damage, and I slammed it on a metal table as hard as I could about 50 times to try to make it break. That's, you know, the worst thing I could think of to torture test it, and it stood up just fine without a scratch. So I think it is pretty damn tough.
Yeah, it's the same water, dust, shock resistant. Yep. Kind of situation where, but I think that it's a good middle ground. You know, we talked about the cat phone, or, you know, that whatever the Kyocera one was that was on Verizon recently with the sapphire mm-hmm. glass display. You know, that thing is so bulky that you wouldn't really hold on to it or wouldn't want to carry that around unless you knew day in and day out, you know, you're working on a construction site or something and you know it's going to get roughed up. This is something that you could use every day just fine, and you wouldn't have a problem yeah. with the amount of stuff that's on it. I mean, I have a Pelican case for this GS6 Edge, and it's smaller than, you know, what the GS6 Edge is in a Pelican case. And that's what you need to get that kind of protection, is usually something like that. And this just has it built in. Of course, with the Pelican case, you can take it off and have the slick metal and all that. But, you know, this doesn't look like you know, a rugged walkie-talkie or something like that. It's just a little tougher, and you get a huge battery.
Right. I mean, we talked about me taking it fishing. I take cheap phones that I'm not going to cry if I never get them back.
You used to take a BlackBerry, didn't you?
BlackBerry, that's right. But if I was a cop or somebody who's outdoors and my phone's going to get beat up a little bit, that's when I'd consider something like this.
Yeah. I mean, I just haven't... I mean, for me, I'm probably just going back to the GS6 proper because I didn't have as much of a problem with the battery because I'm not out on a daily basis, like, you know, hammering the battery every single time. So, you know, it's nice every once in a while to have the big battery for me. But for a lot of people, the battery is, you know, it is the feature, and this has it. I mean, it's just situations where the GS6's battery would have been dead, you know, halfway through when this thing is still going. I mean, it's still not phenomenal battery life. You know, it'll still use it up, but I'm not worrying about charging in the middle, which is crazy.
Cool.
Somebody in the comments wants me to drive my truck over it. I totally would.
No.
That's pretty much the story on the GS6 Active, so...
I guess we can't really talk about Samsung this week without talking about this keyboard thing that's been going on. So there's a segue for you. If you haven't seen, there have been headlines about how 600 million phones have all exploded. They've melted in pockets.
Whoa, what stories were you reading?
And leaked in for, all right.
Most of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing.
This 600 million number was the worst part about it, I think.
That's what bugs me. All right, we'll get to that part. We'll get to the part that bugs me. Here's the important part. The important part is it was discovered apparently back in December, way back in December 2014, which was all of 6 months ago. You know, that is 6 months. Let's not downplay that, but it's not like ancient. The way Samsung's keyboard updates its language packs, and if you remember, and in fact, we broke this story years ago, back with the Galaxy Note 3, maybe, or the 2, I forget which. Samsung uses SwiftKey's SDK
So I want to say Note 3.
I think it was the Note 3. So Samsung uses the SwiftKey SDK for its prediction and language modules and all that, right? It's Samsung's keyboard.
And this keyboard. is not uncommon among manufacturers.
Right. It's Samsung's keyboard. They're just using SwiftKey's prediction. And these language packs can update themselves. If you use the SwiftKey keyboard, you see it do it all the time. Samsung's does it in the background automatically, which is the way I would want it to do it. The problem was it's been doing it unencrypted. And the problem with it was doing it over...
What? Put on the brakes.
Sorry.
It's encrypted, but it was easy to defeat.
Right. It was doing it over HTTP and not HTTPS, which was a big part of the problem. And what? What?
No, you're right. Okay. I'm shaking my head. Yep.
Okay. Keep going.
So as these language modules were updating themselves, it was possible for somebody... If you were on an unsecure, why do we say unsecure instead of insecure? Aren't they the same thing?
It's unsecured.
Unsecured network, public network. And there was an attacker also on that same network as you were, and they were able to catch you at the exact time this language pack was updating. Then they could inject this new payload into the language pack because of some other stuff and be able to... push an executable into that, and that's bad. That's very bad, actually. Right. But the thing is, you need all those things to line up and happen before anything bad happens at all. So while it's a very real exploit, a very real problem, it's not a very practical problem. And, you know, as Samsung said this week, they've received no reports of this happening in the past 2 days since it was made public. And that was kind of my reaction to the whole thing. It's like, yes, it's a problem. Yes, it'll be fixed. No, you don't need to lose sleep over it at all.
I mean, it's just, it's not a very clever attack
it's
very much a standard, like this is a standard thing that happens. Unfortunately, that all it takes is that we see this with computers, just like we see it with phones, unsecured network. Something's not being encrypted properly. There's a man in the middle waiting on the network that can send you things while your computer or your phone is just pulling things down that it thinks are fine.
But Jerry
in
Russell,
this case, it happens to be in the background when, you know, you don't choose when your keyboard updates, which makes this a little worse.
There's the two biggest issues, and I don't know how Samsung addressed these, you know, how they fixed it, but when it checks to see if there is a pack available. The communication between the server and the phone is encrypted, but it also is very easy to put your own encryption in there instead. And the phone will say, oh, I got a response back. Oh, I'm looking at this key. Oh, this is cool. I'm going to download this file that they're going to send me. So you do that, and your phone is ready to download and run a file, and it runs that file as root. There's your problem. It will auto-execute the file it downloads with elevated permissions, and the original communication is done in a way where you can intercept that and change it and inject your own file. Those two things needed fixed. I think Samsung did a really good job, you know, getting a fix out. Maybe 6 months is too long, but we don't know how soon they tried to work on it or how closely they monitored the situation. If it started happening willy-nilly everywhere, maybe they would have done it a lot quicker. I don't know, you know, whether to praise them or damn them for waiting 6 months, but they did get a solution pushed out relatively quickly as soon as it came to light.
Yeah, so a couple of things happened. One was it was initially said by Now Secure, the company that announced this exploit finally, that Samsung actually had pushed out patches to all the operators, and that's what we were waiting on. They weren't sure if anyone actually had it. They knew of, I think it was 4 phones that definitely didn't have any fix to it, but then they didn't know about all the others. So that's where that whole 600 million things come from, and that's a little clickbaity for me.
Right. Basically, any Samsung folds sold since late 2013 may be affected.
It was the
so add them all up.
GS4, GS4 Mini, GS5, and GS6 on the 4 U.S. carriers.
The most popular ones.
Right. So, it sounds like Samsung basically quit waiting and said, all right, we figured out we can push this out through the security update thing through Knox, which is Samsung's baked in, you know, pretty uber security
thing. And why it's there.
Yeah. And
they can,
you know,
just push out a policy update that changes how it works.
Yep.
Why maybe you shouldn't hack into the phone and turn Knox off. You know, I'll let you decide what to do with your phone, but this is a big reason why I quit, you know, rooting my phones and hacking into them, because it's my life in there now. So I want this stuff to work. But anyway, off that soapbox. So they're going to push out this software, you know, security update. That's not a full system update that doesn't have to go through the carriers, I guess. And that's a good thing. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Jerry. I can't decide if it's entirely possible that in the security world of smartphone manufacturers, this is a relatively minor exploit. And you don't ever want to call anything like that minor, but you know what I mean. Like, it's not a 0-day, holy crap, have to fix this thing yesterday type of exploit, right? I mean, Russell, is that a rational way of looking at it, maybe?
That's how you generally end up looking at a lot of these things, is that it's something that the exploit is only interesting to the people who are telling you, because the people who are telling you are usually a security firm of some kind.
That makes money off... I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And so it ends up getting kind of blown out of proportion in a lot of cases, because, you know, that's the attention grab, and that's how these companies get paid attention to. That doesn't take away from the issue being worth looking at critically, but it also makes it hard to do what we're doing right now, which is stand back and go, okay, so this is something we just, you know, we have to be aware of, but it's not like the end of the world.
And this fits into a broader thing that I'm actually thinking of writing something about. Security is never really secure, period. There's always somebody out there as smart or smarter than the people that have worked out ways to do things, and they're going to circumvent almost anything you can imagine. That what's important is finding these loopholes and responsibly reporting them, and the people that can fix them fix this loophole, and we all wait for the next one to come to light. You just got to try to keep up. You're never going to get ahead.
And where's the line between responsible reporting and shouting fire in a crowded theater?
These now secure guys, yes, they have an agenda. They want to make money. Everybody on the internet wants to make money that has a website. I think other than that 600 million number they threw around, if what they wrote was true, they talked to Samsung in December, I think they did a good job. They didn't, you know, you don't see, I didn't see press releases in my email from this company talking about how, you know, 600 million users are going to have all their information stolen because of this horrible exploit, and you need to tell everybody right away. They just announced it on their thing, well, and let it run its course.
Sort of. They had two different web pages, and this is where this bothers me. The first website, which is the one that you and I looked at initially when the news first hit, was, you know, a very informative, almost white paper-ish, you know, kind of breakdown of what happened. And then there was this other page, and this other page was what, you know,
got that's my the one attention. That kind of set
the
me
one
off.
With the Punisher yeah. skull and
yeah.
stuff on
yeah.
Right.
Okay, I didn't know those two were the same company.
Yeah,
I
it was the same company. Yeah, and the two pages happened at the exact same time, and the Punisher skull one links to the very professional looking white paper-ish one. So yeah, I mean, they definitely went the right way, but then somebody else at the company went, or...
Okay, I take it all back then. I didn't know. I tried to see the good. But,
yeah,
but I saw what you're talking about, and that was horrible.
Yeah, that's why I get that I probably go a little too far in the other direction, being like, all right, whatever, it's not a big deal. But that's part of the reason why. I mean, just come on.
Dude, if you go to Starbucks and you see me and Russell sitting there with all kind of wires coming out of black laptops, be afraid. If not, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen to
and
you.
I mean, I like what Jerry said. It's the minute, I mean, as we talk about this larger privacy thing, the minute two people know something, it's no longer a secret. The minute you do anything online, there's the possibility for somebody, and as far as I'm concerned, the probability that somebody else will see it. I go back to the line I gave Sasha Pallenberg in Barcelona a couple of years ago. I was on some live stream he was doing, and that we really won't honestly flat out care about our privacy, and this isn't everybody, but the vast majority of us, until our search histories are made public. It's not even where you live. It's not even your social security number. People won't honestly care until either their identity is stolen and their credit screwed up, or their search history is made public.
And I think that when you put, like, of course, the people that first put out this talking about this exploit, they're going to have their own thing. I think it's up to us when we talk about it to put it in that perspective. What exactly happens if you're hit by this? What are the easy ways to avoid it? And how long can you wait to expect a fix? And, you know, that's very informational. That's not sensational talking about how many millions or hundreds of millions of people are affected, or your phone's going to explode, or this, you know, worst case scenario stuff. It's all about, you know, telling people who aren't going to read the white paper type report or look at the code samples or anything like that, you know, tell them what, how reasonably upset should they be, or how worried should they be about the data that's on their phone.
And it's catch 22, because if you don't, you know, if you come out and say, eh, all right, no big deal, whatever, then nobody's going to read it. I used to write headlines like that. It was like, nothing happened today. Well, then what? All right, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, the short version is, don't worry about it. Samsung's pushing a fix. Nobody's going to get at your phone that way. Just realistically, they're not. So.
And one, if you're the type of person who wants to worry about it, whether somebody tells you not to worry about it or not, don't use public Wi-Fi.
Yeah, fixed. That's the easiest way to avoid it.
Yep.
So. Okay. With that, I tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want Russell to go a little crazy on this crazy little toy he's been all crazy about.
And I'm getting, I mean, more excited about it now.
Crazy Russell. Be right back. So this episode of the Android Central Podcast, and that's us, is sponsored by the Sega's V Squared. And that's a phone that we've taken a look at this year, way back at CES. The V Squared is packed with industry-leading tech. Remember the specs? Up to 464 gigabytes of storage thanks to dual SD cards. It's got a 21 megapixel camera that shoots 4K video, Harman Kardon speakers, wireless HD streaming to your TV, and the phone's waterproof. Gizmag called the V Squared a beast of a smartphone. Forbes said it was a top disruptive innovation at CES 2015. And if you've never heard of Sega's, it's probably because they've been working behind the scenes making software for other major smartphone companies for the past decade. But after watching other companies water down the tech to increase profits, Sega's had enough. So they're taking all their industry-leading tech and are launching their first smartphone, the V Squared, on Indiegogo right now. Just go to Indiegogo.com and search for V Squared. Buy a V Squared today and support tech that pushes the boundaries of possibility. I feel like we should be singing Prince's Let's Go Crazy or something, but that's just going to get taken down from the internet in a heartbeat.
Right.
Yeah.
It could be.
I'm thinking of, how does that song begin?
Really? I'm not going to sing it. Nice try, though. That was a great try. I'm not doing it.
Totally not doing it. Huh?
Really? Can't believe Jerry doesn't know that. All right, Russell, you've been playing with the Dell Venue 10 7000 series.
You did it.
Capital S series.
What's the actual capital number? Does it have a real number like the 7640 did? Or
it's a 7040.
7040. Yeah.
So it's a smaller number than the small tablet?
Yeah, because it's the 10.
Okay.
Because the 10 and the 8 would be in separate categories.
Is there any indication what the number, what the 7,000 something number actually means?
No, it doesn't matter. Dell, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Look at me, right here. Listen to my voice, Dell. Stop. No, stop. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I mean, Dell made an Android laptop. That's what I'm calling it from now on. Like, it's in the exact same vein as a dozen of the Windows convertible tablet things that split off and become tablets and do fancy things, but then connect to a reasonable feeling keyboard with reasonable apps that do stuff. This is, as far as I'm concerned, this is an Android laptop.
It works most of the time.
And why do I want an Android laptop?
Yeah, I mean, the last time I saw one, it was pretty bad, like an actual Android laptop.
No, I'm asking seriously. I want Russell to tell me why we would want an Android laptop.
for two reasons. One, it keeps you connected to the Android ecosystem in a way that is similar to what you have on your phone already. It doesn't require, you know, separate functionality. You already know how these applications work. And the second part of that ends up being a portability experience that's actually better than a lot of the Windows machines you use. When I'm talking about portability, I'm talking about battery life, ease of use, the ability to use a lot of these kind of centrist apps where you grab different virtual keyboards or you grab, different applications that are for quick, like, one-off things that you would do. A lot of those experiences are still better on Android than they are on Windows. Think about, like, when I'm reading a book or when I'm reading comics or when I'm watching a movie or something like that. On my Windows machine, I open Chrome, I go to Netflix, I go and do these things. The native Windows apps are still not great for these experiences, where the native Android apps are still really good. The trade-off has always been these larger format experiences. The Android tablet experience hasn't been great in landscape, but a lot of them end up forcing portrait, and over time, we've seen that kind of slowly shift away, and it's not gone. There are still some weird behaviors every once in a while when you go to do that, but for the most part, that tablet experience is really enjoyable now.
Okay.
Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes. Yes, you did. I'm with Phil. I used one made by HP maybe almost 2 years ago, and I walked away from it. Why do I want this horrible experience on a laptop? And I was curious how much better it might be.
I have been trying to do this since I got that horrible keyboard and dock thing for the, the Motorola tablet, the Zoom. I went all in, man. I bought that tablet dock. I bought that weird separate keyboard. I was all in. I was ready to go, and it has been so terrible. The Zoom was terrible. The Transformer line that came after it was terrible. I've had a couple of people say, "Oh, well, this is just like the Lenovo Yoga series." It's really not. Like, I get why you think it is, but it's definitely not. And a lot of that has to do with Dell going in and taking what you expect from a physical keyboard and applying it in really subtle software to the tablet. Things like Control C and Control V working for copy and paste, which are things that almost no Bluetooth keyboard actually does.
Right.
Because it's not baked into Android. Or two-finger scrolling on the trackpad when you go to do things like that. These experiences Dell has baked into the keyboard so that it feels like a laptop experience when you go to do these things. And it works most of the time. The only time that it pulled me out of that experience was when I was using the trackpad to interact with the notification bar. Because that's all very much a one-tap experience. And so when you try to tap with your finger on the trackpad and pull down, like, that feels funny. But the whole rest of the experience genuinely feels like you're using a laptop when you've got that keyboard attached.
Oh, I know you brought up the Transformer, and I like the fact that the Transformer would dock in a keyboard, because very, very rarely sometimes I actually need to type something when I'm out of the house, and that way I didn't have to carry around a laptop. But the rest of the time, I undocked that baby and used it as a tablet. But what you're telling me is that the experience may be much better now.
I felt like it was. I mean, I really felt like the experience was much better. And I thought that weird design that Dell had, I wasn't sure I was going to like it in tablet mode at first. Like when I took the keyboard off and walked around and did stuff. But after like 4 hours of use, all the weight is in your hand when you go to use that tablet for everything. Even when you're holding it in portrait, when you're holding it in landscape, and that makes it surprisingly comfortable. You're really gripping it by the spine thing when you're going to do stuff, and it changes the way that you hold the tablet and do stuff, even when you're playing games.
I know it looks good. It looks damn good.
Yeah, it looks. I mean, Russell did a number on those pictures in the review. Makes it look really nice. But I think, it just seems like something that works. I mean, it doesn't look tacked on or like a secondary thought.
Talk a little more about the Intel stuff, because, I mean, for a lot of people, that's still a big question mark. And I don't think it needs to be, but...
You mean as far as like performance goes?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, this. I sat it next to the Nexus 9 and ran a ton of apps side by side to see, like, if there was any performance jank. And just like the Venue 8 that you and I both looked at, I mean, it's great. I mean, there's no real awkwardness there aside from the normal software awkwardness. Like Facebook is still kind of weird in, on a big screen experience. And that's just because Facebook has no large screen experience for mobile apps. They just don't.
I mean, I'm past the point where I worry about having an Intel processor in something Android device. It doesn't even matter. After using the Zenfone 2, I was like, this thing screams and it runs everything just as well or better than phones that have the latest Snapdragon in them or, you know, the latest NVIDIA processor. It doesn't matter anymore. And there's no app compatibility funkiness or anything like that.
Nope. They have definitely figured it out, and it makes me really happy because they do a couple of other things really, really well. As I think Jerry pointed out recently, their wireless radio stuff that Intel's got cooking is really exceptional too.
That was the big deal. Go back and see the interview we did with Johnny Shi and I just totally forgot her name. Aisha, I forget her last name. I'm sorry. From Intel, back from the Zenfone 2 launch, and yeah, like they are stoked to have modem and processor running at the same time on this thing.
And the crazy thing is, you're seeing Intel processors in a lot of the lower end devices. You know, they're really being price conscious with the Intel processors, and so you're seeing some of these. I think Asus is one of the earlier ones that had, you know, in like their $150 tablets had Intel processors, and we were like, oh, that's kind of weird, but they have great performance at that price that you just wouldn't get out of like a couple year old ARM processor that you would normally need to have in that thing.
Right. If you had experience with an Android phone that or tablet that had an Intel processor 2 or 3 years ago, you can forget all that. It's on par, if not better, at some things than anything ARM has to offer. And I think that's a lot because Intel and Google work together very closely. If you look inside your SDK, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff that's, you know, Intel specific that's built in.
Yep, we've come a long way from me wanting to take my my Google TV box out back and shoot it.
Oh yeah, a lot of those were Intel, weren't they?
The very first one was Intel, and I got really excited about it at first because I thought that was going to be a super good idea. And then I plugged that box into my TV and immediately unplugged it again.
Well, the Nexus Player is Intel.
Yep.
Yep.
So, I'm excited. I mean, Dell needs to, you know, quit naming things dumb.
Right.
But I mean, who else is going to make Intel stuff now? Do you see anybody else popping over and?
You know, I would like to see Lenovo / Motorola start to use
Intel. Yeah, that's good.
You can see
especially
that.
Since Lenovo has a really excellent desktop relationship with Intel.
And they also make Android tablet. I think they've made some Android tablets that run Intel as well. And of course, Motorola dabbled in that a couple times.
Yeah.
I don't know how Intel handles the special stuff, the motion coprocessor stuff. I don't know off the top of my head what their processor line would do to handle that kind of thing, but I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they have an answer to that, that we see that.
No, I mean, it this is Intel. I wouldn't say that there's anything they can't do.
Yeah.
Cool. How much is this one again? It's like $500.
This one's $500 without the keyboard, and then the keyboard ends up being another $130 or $140.
That's what killed me because
that's kind of industry standard pricing though.
But
when you look at the convertibles,
you're almost nudging up into MacBook or Surface territory there.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely in Surface territory as far as
it matches the Surface 3 dollar to dollar pretty
good. Yeah, the Surface 3 is reasonably equipped, and I have yet to put the two of them side by side and see, you know, how I like those two experiences. This coming from someone who is a big fan of the Surface Pro 3. So I'm really eager to do that at some point.
You know what? This really frustrates me though, because we see this very nice looking, well performing Android laptop for all intents. And then Dell's not making like a really nice $550 Chromebook with like the same hardware.
Yeah,
and that's really frustrating to me.
That would be good.
All right, it would probably be a bit cheaper at that. You know, you wouldn't need quite as much hardware in there. But God, I really wish that you could just have that option. You know, because this thing looks like it could be a better choice than buying a tablet and a Chromebook, a $200 Chromebook and a $400 tablet.
Well, I think whenever they decide how Google's Chrome and Android are going to mix together and they get all that sorted with how the apps are going to be presented and run, this Dell Venue 10,000 over 9,000 Goku tablet, whatever it's called, it turns into a really cool option then.
Yeah.
You know, I can see more features coming into Chrome browser for Android on a laptop style device.
Right, where it looks more like, you know, you get the same kind of tabbed experience, pin tabs,
yes,
all the keyboard controls and stuff like that. Because so the Venue 10 and a half inches, right? Or yep, thereabouts.
It's 10.5 inches.
So just barely smaller than that 11-inch Chromebook range, which are often underpowered and not very fun to use. I mean, this really makes me think of the HP Chromebook 11 that I loved, because it was very close to just an Android tablet. It ran an ARM processor, super thin and light, charged over micro USB, and I loved it because it was easy to carry around. It did some basic stuff. You know, this is way better experience than that. And it can be a tablet if you want to take the keyboard off.
Yep. And, you know, I am usually one of the first people to throw up red flags when people talk about future versions of an operating system. After messing around with Android M, the developer preview on the Nexus 9, it's going to be awesome on this tablet. Yeah.
How long till we see an Intel-powered Nexus device?
Dude, I was hoping this year.
Yeah.
Beyond the Nexus.
I'm going to hang on hope for next year.
I mean, yeah, other than
Nexus. I know you meant a phone, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure licensing plays a big part into that. Intel guards their IP very, very closely.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe until just this past 6 months, maybe Intel just wasn't there yet as far as smooth performance and good battery life and an all-around acceptable experience. I think they've come a long way in the past year, and a lot of that just in the past 6 months.
I mean, look, they've selected TI processors and NVIDIA processors that haven't worked out all that great in Nexus devices.
And I think that's part of the reason why they may be gun-shy about going off that easy path again.
Oh, what's the worst thing that could happen? Come on. Come on, Google.
Galaxy Nexus, just get it back out of your box and use it. That's the worst thing that could happen.
2012 Nexus 7?
Yeah, okay, fine. Fair enough.
I mean, you know, they've had no problem, of course. I mean, they very easily could have, when they did their, you know, their in-house Chromebooks, they could have done a lower-end model with an ARM processor, you know, and they did that before. But now, you know, you see they make the Pixel, and it's high-end, and it has Intel in it, because that's coming from the laptop end down to a Chromebook rather than from the phone end up. But I don't see any specific reason why they couldn't, if they really wanted to do an Intel Nexus, make it happen.
Huawei 5.9 inch with an Intel processor. Make it happen. And an S Pen.
Frankenphone. Frankenphone.
Is there any other rumors I missed? Let's throw them all together.
Wow.
With a watch that comes out the back that you can
slide out
with an Iron Man skin. We can't forget that.
Yeah. I've got a Talkman over here. I should try at some point, I think.
Save yourself.
Yeah, well. Okay. Let's take one more break. When we come back, I'm very excited. This is my excited face. The return of voicemails. It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
When we come back, voicemails. Phil gets excited.
Yay! I should reach over. Hang on, let me try that again. I think I just... Oh, yep. Seriously, when we come back, we'll do something that won't involve me turning off the mixer. Maybe. Be right back. Okay, so maybe it's not news that supported open source is now widely accepted at the highest levels of enterprise computing, but the extent of adoption is probably broader than you think, and most of the open source running in elite data centers is from Red Hat. And it's more than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux, too. Red Hat offers storage solutions, cloud computing, and everything you need for application development, and it's all open source and all enterprise grade. The stats are eye-opening. Red Hat runs in every executive department of the U.S. federal government, every airline, telecom giant, and healthcare company in the Fortune Global 500. The New York Stock Exchange, and every commercial bank in the Fortune 500. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 use Red Hat for everything from the critical to the routine. The only thing that's really surprising is how many people, and these are people who know a lot about technology, mind you, don't know this. It's almost as if Red Hat got snuck in, got comfortable, and quietly transformed the technology business without making a fuss. Sometimes the most disruptive technology is stuff no one notices at first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining enterprise technology, visit redhat.com. Red Hat, build on it, run with it, count on it.
I'm going to send this podcast to Bob Saget and see if we can get on one of his world's dumbest TV shows.
I totally hit the one button I shouldn't have hit because it just like killed all the audio. Oops. I knew that was going to happen. I got to quit playing with sounds and stuff. All right, what do you want to do first?
Never quit.
You want to do Q&A or you want to do the voicemails? Should we do voicemails first?
Yeah.
It's been a long time. You think this will work?
I'm 50-50. That's no why comment. I'm excited to try.
Yeah. All right. All right, let's start with this one from Andrew, I think.
Not hey guys, me. Andrew from Edmonds, Washington here. Either an Aquarius or Capricorn, depending on your choice of zodiac, which gives me the advantage of picking my generalized and ambiguous horoscope each week. As for my blood type, well, your guess is as good as mine. My question for you this week is inspired by Russell's recent review of the Dell Obnoxious List of Numbers tablet. What do you think needs to be done for Android tablets to break out of the entertainment category and into productivity? And do you guys have any favorite tablets for entertainment purposes right now?
Well, what is it, Russell? What's it going to take?
I want proper split screen. That, like, straight up Google needs to pluck that from Samsung, make it universal across the apps with, you know, a nice, healthy API to make it work. I'm not talking, like, crazy Microsoft in thirds or anything like that. Just straight down the middle. You know, two apps for when it's in landscape. And short of that, you know, a way to hold app developers accountable for doing really just rude things with forced landscape stuff. Even Dell's own gallery app, the tutorials for Dell's own gallery app forced me into portrait to give me tutorials for the depth sensing stuff. And then switch me back to landscape when the tutorial is over. It was so aggravating.
But even though the cameras are set up in landscape.
But right. Can we have that since Apple has invented multi-screen stuff?
No, what Google needs to do is do it in the window manager. All of what Russell just said, take it out of the hands of the developers because half of them are never going to do it right. I love you guys that are developing apps. But we all know that a lot of these apps are never going to get done right. Google needs to just do it themselves in the window manager. Well, that can be done.
You can't rely on just every application. Like if it doesn't work for all apps, then it can't work for any apps.
Right. It needs to just be universal.
That's been the problem with the Samsung tablets is Samsung can't do anything about it other than get people to try to integrate with their multi-window system and then they choose to do it or not. And like you said, it's either all of your main apps that you use have it, or you're just not going to trust it because, you know, you're going to be like, oh, that's a really cool app. It doesn't do my multi-window right, so I guess I won't use it.
And for a tablet like the Venue 10, it's not like it would break functionality. They want to force it portrait. Fine, force it portrait. Just it's not actually portrait.
Force it portrait inside a landscape with window with big black bars on the side to make the developers look bad.
Yep.
Other half of that question. Favorite like entertainment / gaming tablet?
Honestly, the Shield tablet.
Yeah. I'm loving the Shield tablet all over again since it got 5.1. It's seriously like an all new tablet. It's crazy how fast and smooth it is now.
My wife has a Tab S 8.4, and that's a close runner up. if you're more worried about screen than horsepower. But either one of those, I think, is a great choice.
The Tab S is a little easier if you're reading books or something. It's a little lighter and easier to grip onto than the Shield tablet.
That screen. That screen on the Tab S is just to die for.
Yeah.
Cool. Second voicemail from...
Also, I want to take a second to say that, that first voicemail guy, your voice is like an angel kissing something.
Hire him for the podcast every
week. His voice was amazing. It reminds me of Jeffrey Kramer, who starts all of the Welcome to Night Vale podcasts.
I'll have to listen to that. All right, here comes Jeff.
Yo, Android Central, what's up? This is Jeff from Richmond, Virginia. The new board and the new podcast setup does sound great, Phil. Really digging it. I have a Note 4 that I got about 6 months ago. When I was running KitKat, this thing was rock solid, speedy, reliable. About a month ago, updated to Lollipop, and this thing has become a complete dog. Super janky, lots of lag. When I hit the home screen, I watch for, 2 seconds while it redraws every little widget and stuff. Just really unpleasant to use. What should I do? Should I wait to get my next phone, or can I downgrade back to KitKat, or wait for the next Lollipop update? That'll probably happen, if ever, in months. Just curious what my options are. What do you guys think? I'm shocked how bad Lollipop is on the Note 4. Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
First off, Jeff is absolutely right.
What?
Yeah.
If you, Phil, I know you have both phones, load up your Nexus 6, and then load up your Note 4 that's had the Lollipop update, and you will swear to whatever chosen god you worship that they are not running the same software at all.
Or even open up a GS6 that shipped with Lollipop and a Note 4 that updated to it, and it's notably slower doing the same things.
Unfortunately, I think the correct fix is to wait for Samsung to build it on the newer code base and make it a little more optimized and send it out to you, which may or may not ever happen.
You know, I think Alex had mentioned that there was a new, the latest Note 4 update that was hitting, Eastern Europe somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he said that it's dramatically faster. It's very weird because the Note 4 is so snappy on KitKat.
And Lollipop had a rough beginning. Anybody with a Nexus 6 or 9 can tell you that it has... it's amazing how much better each build was than the last, especially the second or third time, and you realize, well, I used to think that old build was good. This is much better. But we wanted all these manufacturers to rush us out Lollipop updates as soon as possible, and maybe they did the best they could do with what they had to work with, and maybe waiting 6 months would have been better. I don't know what to say there. I just know that it can be fixed. Samsung is capable of fixing it. Will they and your carriers worry about getting it to you is my main concern.
Nobody mentioned just hard reset.
And sometimes that fixes things, but this is a little bit different.
Yeah.
For the Note 4, it's a shame because it took a phone that we all loved and made it, I'm not going to go as far as say unusable, but not nearly as pleasant to use.
It's one of those things where it's in perspective of how the phone was before it got the update. I didn't really think the Note 4, I have an AT&T Note 4, that it was that slow after the Lollipop update. Then I got the GS6 and compared it. And it's dramatic.
Fair enough.
I have never used a Note 4, so I don't really have an opinion here. But
hey, I just updated while we were podcasting this phone to Lollipop. How about that? I guess everybody listening's like, what phone, Phil? What phone? HTC One Max. So it's now running Lollipop, or will in a minute, actually.
It had the good old days.
Here we go. Ooh, this one's 700.
Nothing good about those days, Andrew.
760 dating apps, one of 36.
The old
91.
Actually, I mean, Jerry, that goes back to, was it 2 weeks ago? That my GS6 got that update, and we didn't talk about that at the time. No, it was last Friday. The GS6, the T-Mobile one, got 5.1 or 5.11. But it was forced out. Like, I was driving down the interstate, And the phone, I was listening to a podcast. No,
this is the G4 that you had that problem on.
Was it the G4? It was the G4, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
The 4 stuff, they both got updated, but the G4 didn't auto-update on you, right?
No, the G4 is the one that did auto-update on me. The GS6 right. didn't. Yeah. I mean, that's just, am I incorrect? That's just a horrible way to...
I wouldn't want it, but if I were the owner of a mobile network that's nationwide that has X number of thousands of people using that phone on my particular network, I frankly don't want them on it unless they're using software that I approved. And that forcing them to upgrade is one way to handle that.
You just, probably no, you not can't, man. I mean, what if there was a fire?
But okay, what if they said you don't get to use our network until you've updated by?
Well, okay. I mean, that's one thing, but at least you know what's happening. Like, you've got to give people, and I'm not saying make it optional. I don't think it should be optional, but you got to give people
an opt out system in the update settings.
Hey, wait an hour, wait 6 hours. You got to give people an option.
I want to make it clear. I'm not saying I like it at all, but I do understand why the option from the unlocked G4, where you can tell it do or do not install updates automatically, why that was removed from some phones. I get it. Even if I don't like it, I get it.
Fair enough. All right, let's do some Q&A. Doug says, Russell, great review on the Dell Venue 10 7000.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure he used the full name just to mess with me. Fine. HP Helpout, interesting name, says, Nexus 6 on T-Mobile, finally got Wi-Fi calling, and I see some people are saying with the M preview, Wi-Fi calling is built in. Does this mean it's part of AOSP, so now the Moto X 2014, when it gets in, will have Wi-Fi calling with T-Mobile SIM?
Maybe. Doubtful.
Yeah.
There's T-Mobile-specific stuff that needs done.
Each carrier implements it differently. Yeah.
Now, hopefully they all move to doing it the same way, and that goes away and your Sprint phone or T-Mobile or your phone on the Sprint network or T-Mobile, it won't matter anymore. It'll just happen.
Now, I can tell you about how it works with Project Fi on the Nexus 6. It's nothing additional. You just place a call and it just chooses. If you're on Wi-Fi and it's fast enough, it'll just go over Wi-Fi. It's not like on T-Mobile where you have an app that's handling it or anything like that. You do not know the difference. It's just you make a call. So that kind of leans towards, you know, having it baked in.
Actually, we've got another question on Project Fi right now.
Do it.
Where'd it go? There it is. Sean asks, so I recently got my Project Fi invite. I was willing to try out the service until I heard about some changes that will happen to my Google Voice number. My heavy Google Voice number, should I go ahead and try Project Fi or just hold off? That sound, boys and girls, was Andrew slamming his head against the microphone.
Nothing happens, guys. It's okay. I have this Nexus 6 on Project Fi right now, and I checked the box that said, take my Google Voice number and turn it into a Project Fi number. And they kind of make it scary because they say, are you sure? Okay, here are these other things. Now, are you really sure? The only thing that changes is that now it's called a Project Fi number instead of a Google Voice number. And when you activate, it takes away technically your Google Voice account, but you go into the Fi dashboard, you know, fi.google.com, and down on the bottom, there's a little button that says Google Voice, and you click it, and you still get to manage all of your forwarding numbers. You still get all those features. You can text from Hangouts from any device, except for now, your options are either Hangouts or Project Fi number. So it's, you know, if you take your Google Voice account and you port, quote unquote, that number over to Fi, nothing happens. And if you need to leave Fi, you can go straight back to Google Voice. They'll let you take your number back. There is nothing different. It's just the naming changes. And the Google Voice, you don't need the Google Voice app on your Fi phone, which is really nice. It's kind of, you know, if you've used Google Voice for your primary number for a while, you know how annoying it is to have that Google Voice app installed and then using Hangouts. This is just built in on Fi. It's just you make phone calls and there's no settings. There's no option to use the quote-unquote carrier number because Project Fi is your number.
Okay.
I mean, I think that got started before anybody had Project Fi yet, and it was kind of badly worded, I guess, in the FAQs or whatever. Your Google Voice account goes away if you port your number. No, it doesn't. It just works differently. Works the same with a different interface and a different name.
How many people do you think have Project Fi right now? Like 7?
Counting Andrew?
Eight. Yeah. I mean, it's more than that.
I bet you they have like, well, now they probably sent out, let me guess, like 500 invites. The claim rate on those of who actually ordered it and have it set up, probably not even half that. There's probably a couple hundred people using it, I bet, outside of Google, which I'm sure that they have plenty of dog fooders.
Do you all have like t-shirts and club meetings and stuff?
No, I've got a really cool Project Fi battery though.
Yeah. All right.
I think there are 5,000 people using Project Fi.
Yeah. It's probably more than I think.
I bet there's a lot of Googlers that are using it.
Yeah. Andrew says, did you guys see that the Twitter app is rated mature 17 plus on Google Play? I laughed.
Of course it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's not surprising at all.
Have you seen some of the cool or just stuff you can find in Twitter?
You know,
I don't care what it is you're looking for.
Best that's, free porn app in the world if you know how to search.
No, I mean, that's my fetish, baby. It's on Twitter.
Wow.
I mean, any game that has an online component already has a high rating. I mean, so that makes sense. Twitter can't be considered responsible for everything that happens that you could potentially find on Twitter. They have to put the rating on there.
I hold it responsible for that.
Can't tell you how many times I've gone to open Twitter when my kid was sitting next to me or something and had to be like, oh, no.
I had that happen last night, actually. It's like, yeah, I've gotta be careful. I'm trying to find
whatever you do, don't search morning waffles on Twitter.
No,
just don't.
Why yeah, because nobody's gonna do
Why
that
would
now.
You say that,
Jerry.
Oh, I was tricked once. I admit it.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, so I did a post. It was when I was over in Korea, and I'd always wanted to do this post, and I was up early one morning or something, so I just did it, and I said 5 mostly innocent Android apps that can help hide your naughty side. And see the apps I used: Instagram, 500 pixels, Twitter, Google Plus, Google Play Books, because that's when I think 50 Shades of Grey was just blowing up. So yeah, I mean, it's not surprising at all.
And hey, people are people. Some of us like to share different things than others.
I have absolutely no problem with it. I, you know, just
I'm glad that it's rated 17 plus because I don't want your kids to see it.
That's what I'm saying. Twitter can't. They can't honestly put an everyone rating on it,
right?
Because they don't control all the content that's there.
Honestly, I thought ours was actually a little low. I mean, the way it works, and I went through this like 12 times for all the apps that are in the Mobile Nation's catalog on Google Play. Like, it's a survey that says, does your app do this? Does it have user generated content? Is it a forum? And that's actually the only reason ours is rated even as high as it is because it's a forum. You know, because we have the forums built in, but
I'm and not, because of me, I'm sure,
and
I'm
because of Jerry
somewhere,
yes. And because of Jerry, yeah, it's not surprising in the slightest. Ryan says, while the Galaxy S4 or sorry, the G4 and the Galaxy S6 have excellent cameras, their price may be too high for most people to buy off contract. What current devices in the 250 to 300 and below no contract range have the best cameras? So, I mean, Jerry, basically, out of all the phones I sent you, right?
Yes, first off, know that you're not going to get Galaxy S6 or LG G4 quality in a camera on a phone unless you spend upwards of $600 on it.
Because a lot of what you're buying is that processing.
Right. But the Zenfone 2 and the Alcatel Idol 3 both have surprisingly good cameras.
I took a lot of good pictures of the Zenfone 2. I mean, again, you lose some of the higher-end processing. You also lose optical image stabilization. That's usually a higher-end feature, but they're doing a pretty good job with that. It takes some good pictures.
Yep. So don't rule it out. Don't expect a miracle. You're not getting, you know, the ultimate because you're not paying for the ultimate. But what they're giving you works really well and is better than you think it is. I can almost guarantee it.
The Moto X takes pretty good pictures and is relatively cheap nowadays too.
Laura's asked, do you think it would be smart or dumb for Samsung to release the Note 5 earlier? Thus the rumors. And should Samsung keep the design language or use the Galaxy S6 layout? And where does the rumored S6 Plus fit in? If there's an S6 Plus, Sex 6 Plus, thank you, Jerry. I got a feeling that's probably like Korea only. But not surprising.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't see why they need to release it earlier.
No, they don't. I mean,
they're on a pretty solid schedule at this point.
Samsung's doomed. No matter when they release it, people are going to say they had to release it because of bad XXX sales, or they had to release it because they want a preemptive strike against Apple. It doesn't matter when Samsung releases it. They're not going to get 100% good press for their timing. We don't care about that because we provide our own insight. But for consumers, I honestly think earlier is better because there is a subset of hardcore users that desperately want the new processor Samsung has, the new memory Samsung has, but they don't want it in a smaller phone with a sealed battery and no SD card.
Who knows what they're, you know, they always do a little leap above the Galaxy S phone of the year too, and who knows what that is, and that could create an issue as far as timing goes.
I just think, you know, I think they realize that the Note 5 is going to maybe sell a little bit better than the Note 4 because there were people who didn't want to buy the S6. Maybe. I mean, that's my thinking. I've been wrong before.
Is the Dell tablet better than the Samsung Tab 10.5? Man, I wish we need some sort of chart to tell me what all the Samsung tablets are, because I've seen a lot of them.
I have the Tab S10.5. I don't have the keyboard for it, though. I like it. It's light and easy to hold for a 10-inch tablet, but everything that the Dell shows looks like it's a better combination if you want that keyboard experience.
Yeah, we have the 8.4 here, or 8.9, whichever it is. So I don't know about the big one, but Samsung is going for thin, light, and spectacular looking in the Tab S series more than, I think, utilitarian.
Yeah, I mean, it is thin, and it has kind of this grippy leather-ish thing on it. Really, it's incredibly light for a 10-inch tablet. But the keyboard for it is just it's one of those ones where it just slots in at one angle and doesn't have a trackpad or anything like that. This is more of a sit on your couch, watch a movie kind of thing, not as much a productivity device. So you kind of have to weigh those in.
Oh, here's a good Project Fi question from Vincent.
Do it.
Do you still get spam calls after porting your Google Voice number to Project Fi?
That is a good question.
Is it spam or is it wrong? Because I get a lot of wrong numbers too.
Well, yeah, it depends what you're talking about. I mean, I've started to get a little bit of an uptick in before I switched to Project Fi. My Google Voice number started getting some spam calls and things, and Google Voice does spam filtering a little bit. You know, it's like a crowdsource thing. You can mark a phone call or a number as spam. But, I mean, you wouldn't get any more or less. I mean, when you switch to Fi, it's just the same number. So you have the same potential to be on any kind of robocall list as anywhere else. There's no, I mean, you still don't have the kind of, I mean, you still have the kind of native blocking functions of Google Voice where you can block numbers and set policies and stuff like that, but I don't think it'd be any better or worse than sometimes you just get a quote unquote bad number. You know, we've all had it when we have different prepaid phone lines and things like that. You get a phone number that was turned over too quickly and you get a lot of unnecessary calls, but Project Fi doesn't have any more or less spam filtering than Google Voice did.
I get one from some apartment complex. I forget where it is. And so, like, I'm always getting calls that, hey, you have a package downstairs. No, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to define what spam calling, you know, are you getting calls that you want a free cruise? Or are you getting calls from people?
I get the free cruise one.
Think John, you know, is John there or whatever?
Ooh, here's a good one from Ashish. Help, my old MPEG videos are taking the upload date as the date in Google Photos and completely messing up my feed. Is there a solution? Can you just go into the info?
You can edit those, can't you?
I don't know. I haven't tried.
I mean, so, okay. Well, I do know that once you've uploaded something to Google Photos, there's no way to edit the EXIF data on pictures or anything like that. You should be able to edit it before you upload.
Right.
That's now, that would involve deleting it and re-uploading it. You can also do that for pictures. You can edit EXIF data on a picture. But there's nothing, unfortunately, there's nothing in Photos where you can say, no, this happened on this date or this month at least. All you can do is when you search for, like if you search for beer or whatever and you get some pictures of cotton candy, you're allowed to uncheck those and say that's not properly, you know, indexed, but you can't do anything like that for dates.
Just another question from Ryan, and that leads me into something we forgot to talk about. I live in Southern California, so I don't really need the learning features of a Nest thermostat. However, I would like to control my HVAC from my Android device. Which connected thermostats would you recommend? I've been using the Nest for a long time, and I like it. The Honeywells are supposed to be good as well. I don't know about that Ecobee that, the iMore guy's been writing about, but that sounded interesting as well.
I think that's a question you have to decide. How far do you want to go? You can, I mean, Insteon, you can spend $1 million and automate your home completely, but if you just want to take care of your heating and air conditioning, I think you nailed it. You know, I like Honeywell. It doesn't work as well with Android, but there's Nest, and I think those are both good options.
So we got the new Nest Cam and not another Drop Cam. Drop Cam is gone. What else we get? We got a hopefully fixed Nest Protect.
And not terrible Nest Protect.
Smoke alarm that won't just turn off if you happen to be flailing your arms because your house is on fire.
that looks funny. It's not funny at all, but it looks funny in my head.
I mean, they stopped selling the old Nest Protect because it was too easy to disable.
No, and that's the right thing to do. But yeah, we got a new app that brings it all under one roof. You know what I want, and the new app is nice. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory if you've used it. What I really want is things that works with Nest to also be in that app. Like I've got the connected sprinklers, Rachio, I don't know how you pronounce it. I wrote about last year sometime, and that works with Nest. You know, basically. Yeah, I need to see if they change the functionality, but it used to be if your house is on fire, the sprinklers would turn on, which, you know, not the most useful thing. And I could see the firefighters being kind of mad if that.
There you go. Happened. Now your house is on fire and you're going to have a high water bill after you put out the fire.
You know, I can just see them be like, dude, turn the sprinklers off. We're working here. But I want that all under one app. Is anything that connects with Nest like that to also be in that one app? That would be cool to me. Nothing? You guys don't care?
I think that's a reasonable expectation. You don't want to have to, I mean, that's kind of the problem. You don't want to have to juggle five apps to do a few different things. And that's kind of the situation right now, is my understanding.
Things need to work together better. Works with Nest is one thing, but they need to be fully integrated, whereas one push of one button can do multiple things across multiple devices, then put it all under one app. I can build a profile that says vacation in a button and my lights and my thermostat drop cam or whatever it's called now.
That's the sales pitch of these, whole home automation things that like AT&T sells and Verizon sells.
And those work very well. Those do work. They're very complicated and very expensive.
Yeah, expensive up front, big service contracts, monthly expenses, things like that.
And we've seen Google, they like to take things that are very expensive and work very well and try to build an alternative that's not very expensive and still works well.
I don't care anymore. I'm tired of this home crap.
Well, one last one, and it's a good question. Sean says, hey, guys, just this morning I got an Amazon Echo invitation. Is it worth $100? Would it work well with my Wemo light switches?
Yes.
Yes. Get one. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's not perfect.
Bill doesn't even need to finish the sentence. Spend money. You know why? Because some of us haven't gotten the invite yet and have wanted one since January.
I did get an email this afternoon asking me to review it on Amazon. Not like work review, but like, hey, you bought this thing. Here it is. And I can't tell if it's like anything more than just the usual Amazon, hey, review this spam.
It is.
Damn it. Well, sorry. I tried.
Unless you want to go into the feedback and be like, it would be really super great if I could order more than one.
I will absolutely do that. It would be super great if you let my friend Russell order one. Please. That's my review. Russell wants one.
Can't just give people money anymore. There has to be invite systems. And
I know. By the way, have you seen the OnePlus 2 feature troll out?
It's going to have the cool version of the Snapdragon 810.
We'll talk about that maybe next week.
And it's got cool features. It'll keep it cool, like cold.
I was just going to make Alex talk about it.
I'm going to have a water-cooled processor. It's going to be awesome.
A special graphite or something.
Please, can I make Alex talk about it? We'll make Alex do an entire podcast on it. we'll be back in 20 minutes.
I'm looking at a lot of cheap unlocked phones, and I really wish that I could put the OnePlus One in the mix with all these others.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there saying, maybe the OnePlus 2 isn't going to be this way. They're just going to do things like a normal company, and here's your phone, and buy it, and we're going to make as many as we can. And I'm just disappointed. I'm done.
And with that, boys and girls, I think it's time to call it a podcast. Wow, poor Jerry. You gonna be okay?
Yes, but dude, you've used one.
Yep.
You know that it belongs with these other phones.
I do.
And it's the company's odd behavior that makes it a reason where it can't be compared to them.
I agree.
You know, when you have the Zenfone 2 that you can just go to Amazon, pick your size, pick your color, it'll be at your house in 2 days, and there's no BS.
Yep.
Sorry.
But if you want to take a picture of yourself setting your mom's hair on fire, then you can get an invite next week instead of next month. Hashtag never settle.
Oh, sorry. How do we even get talking on that? Oh, the Snapdragon stuff. Yeah.
You started it.
I know.
Blame Phil.
Blame Phil. There's your podcast title. Phil's fault. All right. Well, as we are every week, we're brought to you by shopandroid.com. I saw they had some G4 cases showing up this week. So if you've been looking for some of those, we'll have more up on them shortly.
Click the buy button.
Yes. Just click the buy button.
Ask questions later.
Yes. So go do that. Go follow us on all the things, the Instagrams, the YouTubes,
the Periscopes.
The Periscopes. We've been having a little fun with that. I almost had a little fun. It's very narcissistic. I mean, I got Phil
hooked on Periscope.
I know. So I mean, I don't have to do it. I could absolutely not do Periscope and be perfectly fine with it. Yeah. It's kind of fun. I've been having fun, like, Periscoping my kids in the middle of the day when we're out eating and making them dance and stuff. Getting all the hearts. Ugh. You see, like, Twitter's exploring with hearts. I don't want hearts. I want stars. Hearts are stars. Jerry, hearts of stars.
I just want, what is it? Green hearts or green diamonds, yes, or whatever is in Lucky Charms. I want them all.
Purple horseshoes.
Yes.
Clovers and blue moons.
And the balloons.
And none of the little hard brown parts. Get those all away. I want all marshmallows.
I would totally go for being sponsored by Lucky Charms on this podcast.
You know, you can buy those on Amazon. Like a 5-pound bag of just the Lucky Charms marshmallows. Being an almost adult with access to the internet and a bank account is like the worst thing in the world.
Special instructions, please deliver when my wife is not home.
That's right. Yeah.
You're going to have it sent to the P.O. box or something.
By the way,
just bury under the mailbox.
We've got a pretty big Galaxy S6 contest going on right now. If you have not entered, there are three ways to win. Only giving away one phone, but there will be a couple other winners to go along with it of, not lesser things, but other things. You can get to that from phones. And remember, when I say phones in a URL sense, it's phone.es / GSX contest.
And it won't be in Spanish.
No, it won't. Shouldn't be. I mean, if it is, nothing is. What's wrong with Spanish, Andrew?
That's what I'm thinking.
Because it's a .es.
Fine. So we got that going on. Go download our app, by the way. I'm trying to get some more bugs fixed, and then we'll push out a new update, and that next update will have Samsung multi-window in it, I promise. Woohoo! So with that, Andrew Russell Jerry. Jerry Russell Andrew.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Phil.
See y'all next week.
Bye.
Adios.
Alright, so if you're on the lookout for the next breakthrough smartphone, this might be it. The Sega's V Squared has up to 464GB of storage, a 21MP camera, Harman Kardon speakers, and it's waterproof. Support great tech today. Go to Indiegogo.com and search for V Squared.